The following was recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. This is the United Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Quirky Dog Podcast, inspired by some of the quirkiest dogs you can ever imagine and the owners who love them. This podcast is brought to you by the quirky couple themselves, Scott and Jess Williams. Their aim is to educate and entertain. Here's Scott and Jess.
Welcome, guys, and happy Wednesday. We are here to talk about aggression in dog sports today. This topic has been bubbling up for a bit, and we are going to be talking about it here today. But first, we're going to start with quirky tip of the day. All right. Today's quirky tip is brought to you by Viagen Pets. Viagen is a cloning company out of Texas. In the last 2 weeks, we have talked about obtaining tissue samples, either from dogs that are healthy and alive and well and doing great, or dogs that have unfortunately recently deceased. I want to tell you guys here today that if you have any questions about this process whatsoever, you need to call Viagen directly. Viagen's phone number is 866-770-7503. I would recommend, if you're even considering cloning or taking tissue samples, especially out of an animal that you just recently euthanized, you save that number in your phone so you can call from the vet's office and say, what's the best protocol for doing this? How can I do this? Cloning, we have clients who have cloned dogs before, actually through Viagen. We've had Viagen on the podcast in the past. It can create amazing, wonderful, long-lasting emotions for you with dogs that you love and you want to continue to have a similar dog around you, but you need to do the process right. So take that number, put it in your phone, keep it with you.
And you may decide not to do it, but if you don't get the sample, you won't have the option.
Yes. And
at least with the sample, you could 5 years from now, you could do it.
And the sample is not as cost prohibitive as actual cloning itself. So look into that. Call them with any questions and put that number in your phone for us today. All right. But the actual quirky tip is, if you are going to be competing in dog sports, I don't care what dog sport it is, lure coursing, duck diving,
agility,
barn hunt, agility, any of them, any dog sport whatsoever, you should probably obtain a CGC on your dog. And even more so than that, you should have all the CGC exercises in a real world environment. Okay. Because even these CGCs sometimes are just curated, so everyone in the class is passing them. It's the same instructor. It's the same building. It's all this stuff to set dogs up for success with the title.
The same distraction dog.
Yeah. We're talking about going to Home Depot. Can you walk through a crowd and everything goes well? If you go to have the vet look at the dog's foot or the dog's ears, not the same person you're training with in the CGC class, is the dog accepting of those things? These are things that you should be considering and that you should be able to accomplish before you compete in any dog sport. So Scott and I, you've started competing in the 90s, right? When you were competing in French ring?
2000.
Okay. So I've been competing in dog sports since the mid 90s. Scott's been competing in dog sports for over 20 years. We've been around dog sports. Okay. This is not something that has been a longstanding thing, that there's a lot of these issues popping up in dog sports. As of recently, the aggression situation has gotten a lot more traction and has gotten a lot more serious. So when I released Cookie That Consults before Christmas, when we were doing all the holiday codes and everything else, I touched on this topic a little bit. There was a very serious dog attack at an agility trial. I believe it was in Syracuse, New York. The judge was very badly harmed by this dog. I'm not sure of the breed, but it was a big thing. Went viral. Sarah Stremming did a podcast after it. I loved it. A lot of people didn't, neither here nor there. But there was a lot of traction with that. Recently, there has been a push within Barn Hunt that people want their dogs to be able to be muzzled before they go in and do their actual searching so they won't accidentally nail a judge. Or maybe dogs are getting attacked in the blind by other dogs. Whether we're talking about dog aggression or human aggression, if your dog has aggression to the point where they are going to be injuring another animal or another human, and you do not have impeccable control over that dog, meaning you're at an agility trial, all of a sudden a dog hops the fence and it's in the ring with your dog. If you cannot recall your dog, or you cannot lie your dog down and run up to your dog to be near the dog and get between those two dogs, your dog should not be competing if it has that level of aggression where it's going to be now chasing after a dog that has come near you. If a person gets too close to the perimeter of you, within 6 feet of you, and or looks at the dog cross or XYZ, and your dog is now going to escalate to growling or lunging or using its teeth or whatever that may be, You should not be competing in dog sports. We need to take it a lot of steps back here. This is not okay. And this is a topic that needs to be addressed because it's popping up more and more frequently. And the reason I bring up the history of when we've competed until now, when I was competing agility at agility trials in the 90s, it literally, there were wooden stakes, string put up in these random parks, and the dogs just did their job. They weren't leaving the ring. It wasn't like we had to close them in and have this perfect exit and entrance. What we're allowing dog sports level of training to look like in dogs now is decreasing year after year after year after year. And I think it's worth pointing out on this podcast, even though we have a lot of pet dog listeners and we do a lot of recreational talk on this podcast about behavior, this is a topic that we're not going to just sit on any longer.
Well, I think that these sports that have popped up over the past 15 years, like the barn hunt and the nose work and the several different nose work organizations now, it's very attractive to get a dog using their own instinctive behaviors and then channeling that into work. That's awesome. We all love that.
Lure coursing could go in that.
Yeah, and lure coursing is another example of that, where the dog is using its prey drive and its instinctive behavior to chase the plastic bag. But it shouldn't be allowed, in my opinion, to express all these instinctive behaviors if you don't have any kind of control of your dog in the first place. You need to have a basic level of control before you put it in a situation where it's following its own instinctive behavior. And I think more people get bit by dogs that have dog aggression than human aggression. And I say that because dogs that have human aggression, the owners usually are pretty protective and cautious. Whereas if the dog only has dog aggression, they're a lot more laid back when there's no other dogs around. But when a dog does come up out of the blue and something happens, it's when they're breaking these dogs up that somebody gets their arm bit, or you know, that's when a bite really happens.
From the redirect. Yeah, that's so true. And it's not that there aren't going to be dogs who have dog reactivity who aren't at these dog sports. It's not going to be the fact that, you know, dogs don't want other dogs in their face and, you know, a dog must be able to meet nose to nose with every single dog out there. When I was younger, my childhood border collie, she would want to resource guard me. If another dog was going to come up, she would, you know, be snarky and everything else. I had really, really good control of that dog on a leash, off a leash, everything else. I was very aware of that situation. So it's not that if your dog has any triggers of aggression or anything else that, you know, this is a closed book situation. It is how well can you control that dog on leash, off leash, with, you know, whatever equipment on you're using within a trial setting. This is the very important part that you need to look at. Where is my baseline level of obedience? And some people don't like the term obedience. We're really big on teaching dogs strong obedience, making sure that we have control of our dogs, because we will always say it gives our dogs more freedom at the end of the day. If you have a dog that you're competing in avidly in dog sports and getting titles and ribbons and everything else day after day, but that dog can't go to the vet and have the vet safely examine the dog, muzzled or not. I'm not saying, you know, dogs have to be unmuzzled. We muzzle Cousteau. I get all that. But if the dog really is not going to accept any level of handling from a vet or a groomer, or maybe even from you, let's back way back from the dog sport train and just get to some basic animal husbandry, you guys. Like, we need to change our perspective here. And partially why this is so important to us and why I specifically am so fired up about it and impassioned by it is because people with these reactive dogs are kind of getting pushed into these types of activities right now. Oh, your dog needs an outlet. You should do nose work with your dog. It'll help your dog be more balanced. You should do agility with your dog. It'll help your dog get its energy out. And nose work, we were talking about this on the way here. It was great. It's a great way that you don't have to have other dogs around. Dogs can wear certain colored bandanas when you know they're reactive. But the dog can't be now tagging the judge after it alerts on the odor. You know, there's a certain line here that we shouldn't cross. And as professionals, as dog training professionals,
as responsible dog owners, forget professionals, just being a dog owner, you know, there's an ethical responsibility to let everyone know, like, you need to be aware of what your dog may or may not do.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. But as professionals, we shouldn't be pushing dogs that are sketchy at all into dog sports. Like, let's get them to be really well-behaved, safe family pets and be able to live a long, happy life, not now be at the local facility, you know, trying to get their yayas out and feel better and get their fulfillment. And hopefully this task now is going to mitigate that aggression. That's not how it works. And that's just not how it works.
You could do some nose work at home. Mm-hmm. You can do these things in a safe environment at home in your backyard. But if you don't trust the dog, you know, around other people, the dog shouldn't be around other people. It's not their fault for getting into your dog's space. When you go to an event that's going to have people, gatekeepers opening the fence, having your dog come in, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, I was saying to Jess, the extent of my dog sport, I was going to say the extent is protection sports, but I did do nose work and I did compete in nose work and I was very familiar with that. And dogs that weren't doing protection sports, but I was surrounded myself with dogs that were trained to bite. We encouraged the biting, full bite, and total control. And I can't think, and I competed in a lot of trials, and I don't remember one instance of a dog attacking a judge, a person on the sidelines. That just didn't happen. And it was, I think, maybe a little bit of it, maybe it has happened since then, but I never saw it happen. And I think the reason was, people that are involved in these protection sports know what their dogs are capable of, and they're putting a lot of control on those dogs. They're also nurturing the aggression, and they're directing the aggression, and they're training them and letting them know what's not acceptable.
Yeah, you know? It's the level of training, too.
It's relationship stuff,
too. If you can't walk throughout your neighborhood without your dog being reactive on a leash, you shouldn't be competing in dog sports with that level of reactivity from dog to dog. Like Scott said, just because your dog just has dog aggression doesn't mean someone's not going to end up getting bit. All right, let's go to break super quick. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little more about aggression in dog sports.
Want to keep up with all the latest from the Quirky Dog Podcast like me and Murphy here? Then make sure you head on over to the YouTube channel and subscribe. Or if you prefer to listen to the madness, go on over to iTunes or Spotify and follow the Quirky Dog Podcast. And hey, while you're there, leave a rating and review and let them know what you think of the show. Until then, keep it quirky.
Okay, we're back. So whether you are someone who thinks, oh yes, we should be allowing muzzles at trials because it'll keep everyone safer, whether you're someone that, you know, has a reactive dog and you've never had an incident at a trial and you feel like everything's fine, even though you do have a dog who's reactive in the neighborhood, we're going to strongly advise you here today that if your love and your passion is for dog sports, continue doing dog sports, but get another dog for the dog sport. Do not keep putting other dogs and other people in danger if your dog truly has aggression in it, where it will injure another person, injure another dog. If another dog happened to slip into the ring, you couldn't recall your dog back. There's a lot of different reasons of how this all comes to be, but the incidents and the severity of the incidents are starting to kind of be on the uptick here. So we need to be conscious of that before we let this whole situation blow out of proportion. And I also do want to stand up and say that it's important that if we are seeing instances of really outward aggression at, you know, these trials, that we're reporting it. And it's not to be a whistleblower and it's not to be a tattletale and everything else, but these certain teams should not be welcome back. There are enough people competing in dog sports. These organizations are making enough money that if we're talking about dogs that will reach out, lunge, and grab somebody as they pass by just because they're super excited to get into the ring and they're a really drivey border collie, that's not okay. Like, I'm sorry, we have super drivey dogs. Our dogs aren't going to be lunging and tagging people as they pass, no matter what state of mind they're in.
Yeah, and you know, I got to back up because it's been a while since I competed. But whether it's the Schutzen, which is now what,
IGP,
or the French ring sport, the very first thing you do with your dog before you can compete at the first level,
temperament test,
is a temperament test, which is like a canine good citizen. And some of them, the IGP was more extensive than the French ring, but there was basic recall. The judge had to actually check the testicles, make sure your dog had two testicles, and had to get kind of personal with your dog. And sometimes it could be a little nerve-wracking. But if your dog showed aggression in those situations, he couldn't play the game.
Yeah.
Like, if a dog's going to nail someone at that point, they're like, hey, sorry, it's not safe for this dog to be on the field. And the dog couldn't play. And even during those tests, the very first dog I competed with, I had a problem with dog reactivity. And I took my dog out to meet the judge, and the other guy has to bring his dog to the judge. And my dog started growling, and he was like pulling on the leash. And the judge just looked at me and said, Scott, it's not your day today. I knew damn well what he was talking about. Like, if I took my dog off the leash, it was going to be a problem. I went, I got more training, I found someone that could help me with that, and then I was able to do it. But at that point, I wasn't ready, the dog wasn't ready, and I couldn't play the game. And I went back, trained more, and then I was able to handle that dog off leash, and I was able to actually enjoy the sport. It was nerve-wracking with that particular dog, but I was able to do it, you know?
He was a strong dog to start really competing in sports with. But this whole talk that we're having, and this is why the quirky tip was, you know, have a CGC like level of training for your dog, especially in a real world situation. This isn't required in basic dog sports, and it is in some other parts of the world. This came up more when the agility thing had a lot of traction, you know, back before the end of 2023, and there was a lot of talk about this going on social media and stuff. And we're not saying that there necessarily has to be a basic, you know, level that you have to pass to be able to compete, but you should have like just some basics, right? A sit, stay, loose leash walking, lack of reactivity, a recall. I mean, I don't mean to sound like novel here, but when your dog is zooming around the agility course and you're like, cookie, cookie, you know, whatever else, like that isn't a trained dog. That dog shouldn't be competing. And there are, you know, various classes that we host around this country and various training centers that host training parties and run throughs and everything else. And yes, we're going to be working some bugs out, but if we are ever putting other people or other dogs at risk, no matter what happens, it's not anyone's responsibility but your own, how a dog perceives, how another spectator or a judge looks at your dog. It is not your dog's it's not anyone's responsibility but your own to control your dog. If a dog breaks out of a crate and now sees a dog running in a trial and is very stimulated and excited by that dog, I've said it before and I'll say it again. We've had Rue Yorey on this podcast. He's very well known for his advocacy with pit bulls and everything else. His dog Wallace wasn't very friendly with other dogs, but Rue had exceptional control over that dog. If a dog came out on the field, he was able to control the dog, control the situation, make sure everything was okay. That is the level of training that we used to require that just seems to be slipping away more and more and more. And the more that we're offering these varying levels of dog sports, and it's awesome, people get a lot of joy and fulfillment for themselves out of their social network and, you know, their accomplishments with their dogs and everything else by having all these other dog sports to reach to. But as Scott mentioned, a lot of these instinctually driven dog sports, we're seeing less and less and less and less control. So we have to kind of weigh the good with the bad here. And when are we going to step in and put our foot down and be like, no, this isn't okay anymore. Like, this is not okay. We need to change how we are addressing these problems. We need to change what we are expecting of ourselves, of our dogs, before we enter these events. Something has to give here. And it shouldn't be that we need to put more protocols in so people are safer by muzzling dogs before they're actually competing in barn hunt and they're waiting in the blind. That's not the solution. Okay. The solution is control.
Yeah. And I have seen in the protection sports at the very entry level there where people have lost control of their dog and didn't have a good recall, but the dogs weren't dangerous at all. And it was embarrassing and they went and got their dog and had to take him off the field because they lost control, but there was no aggression issues associated with these particular dogs. They just didn't have good off leash control yet. And they were finding that out in a trial setting. And that's a very humbling situation for the handler. But you just learn, I got to work more. I got to start approaching this behavior in a different way if what you've been doing isn't working up to that point. Or sometimes the dog just went in too early. They just weren't ready yet.
Yeah. And in a world where, you know, we're introducing more breed bans, where we're trying to get, you know, restrictions on training tools and everything else, we need to be representatives in the sport dog world of really well-behaved animals, okay? We have plenty of problems in the pet dog realm of reactivity and aggression and dogs that can't get, you know, basic exams at the vet and all of this stuff. We see a myriad of all of that in the pet dog world. The sport dog world has to step up and has to be better and has to lead by example. And many dog trainers do compete in dog sports, and you guys need to have exceptional control, especially of your dogs, because people are looking to you. You are modeling what a sport dog competitor should be like. And even if your dog isn't reactive or isn't going to bite someone or anything else, you should still have a basic level of control for your students and other competitors and everything else to, you know, want to obtain, to strive for. Now is the time to step up and be better. And, you know, we've had a few serious incidents. We have a few organizations calling for extra protocols so these dogs can still, you know, safely compete. Your dog is not safely competing if it's actually going to nail another person or it's going to get into a dog fight and someone else has to intervene and there may be a redirect bite. That is not okay. That dog should not be competing in any dog sport.
And the particular sport where this is happening, I mean, they're going to start losing venues because there's liability issues and people aren't going to want to host a sport where these type of things become a little too commonplace. If it's happening here and there, people are going to be... Now, an example is, what is the one where they run down and
fly
get
ball.
The fly ball? That was getting a lot of dogs crazy because they're watching these other dogs flying back and forth and they're all getting really overstimulated. So that's something that... some venues, they don't do fly ball anymore because it's there's so many dogs overstimulated in that environment that the people that were hosting are like, I don't even want to deal with this at my venue, at my location.
Or it was just too noisy. Fly ball has an issue there. But I mean, that's the thing. Dogs want to chase and fly ball. That happens. Fly ball trainers are some of the best trainers out there in the country at this point, in my opinion. They are training dogs at a high level of drive to do a very specific job, and they have to do their job, and they can't be running from one lane to another just because they get their yayas out of chasing the dog next to them with the ball instead of getting their own ball, you know? And when we bring up these instinctual sports, it's not just that it's an instinctual dog sport. It's an instinctual dog sport without any control. So probably, to me, one of the most common instinctual dog sports is herding, right? So, you know, herding trials, mostly border collies there. That's expanded a lot since AKC has its herding and everything else. There is a very high level of control with herding. Yes, the dog is doing something instinctual, but the handler is able to direct the dog either way around the sheep, make the dog come up on the sheep fast, slow, lay down and stay down. Like, there is a very high level of control. So it's not just these sports that are nurturing the instinct. It's the sports that are just letting their dogs totally act on instinct without putting any extra control on them and actually wanting a certain level of disobedience. Like in nose work, you don't want the dog checking in with you. When you're building drive and protection, you don't want the dog too worried about pressure. When your dog is actually hunting in barn hunt or ratters or whatever it is, you know, the dogs, it's just like they're out in the woods hunting for critters. You know, these are instinctual behaviors that if you can't control, you need to take a step back and think, is this really serving me best? Earth dog is another one. Dogs are just diving down and hunting for things. That's fine. That's fun for the dogs, but is it helping your overall cause? And do you have behavioral fallout elsewhere where these competitions aren't helping your cause? It's very important to kind of take a step back and think about these things.
Yeah, I think you've covered it. I can't think of anything else to add, really. I mean, just get a basic canine good citizenship, you know, test under your belt. Legitimate one.
And be able to rehearse that in public. Be able to rehearse that in public and make sure you're there. And if you're struggling in dog sports, we're not trying to make you feel bad about yourself. Just take a step back. Don't enroll in the next session of classes. Eat your trial fees that are coming up. Take 6 to 8 months and really see what you can get out of your dog with control and then go back. Because that level of anxiety you feel, that tightness you feel in your chest, that concern you feel, that hypervigilance you have looking for, where's this dog? Where's that dog? Is this person getting too close to me? That will be subsided if you have more control over your dog. You will have much less anxiety and your dog will be sensing your anxiety much less. So do yourselves a favor, take some time off, see if you can regroup. And if you can't, get another dog for dog sports. Do not keep competing with a dog who could seriously injure another animal or another human, because that is just not fair. And it's just not a good look for dog sports. No, I'm sorry.
The dogs don't care about the ribbons.
Yeah.
No, they're not there for the trophy.
Yeah.
They're there to have fun.
Yeah.
And if they're not having fun because they're getting nervous about a judge getting too close to them or a person getting too close to them, it's not fun for the dog. If a dog feels a need to lunge or lash out, they're not having fun.
Yeah. They're not feeling good in their own skin. They're feeling insecure. All right, you guys, thank you so much for joining us here today. I hope we gave you a little bit of food for thought. This one has been bubbling up for a bit, and we had to talk about it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We will see you next Wednesday. And in the meantime, keep it quirky. Bye.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21, Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.